language to the people who then sit and loan them and use them that manner without their approval.
So my experiment is to spend whatever amount and amount of traveling, I keep my iPhone shut off in my pocket, and I use some kind of talk text phone for entertainment, like FM broadcast and all my MP3s, and that's it. That's enough, you know. And when I go to the window to buy the ticket and I travel and I reach my destination, I pay with a taxi cab and cash, you know. Maybe this will remove some of the stress, you know, that I have in my daily life related to internet-based communication, you know.
Okay, you've agreed to do that. There's people with all kinds of different versions of that. There's a lot of people that I talk to tell me they never owned a television, which is culturally surprising because I'm of a certain age where children were basically brought up in front of a television. One of my happiest moments when I was 5 years old, I moved into our new house. And I had my own room, and I had my own black and white television. So who could ask for it? The thing was, when my older sister would kind of pop me on the nose, give me a bloody nose, that she wanted to watch Page Place or something on my TV. But then that's not going to be an idea. During the holidays, I'm giving her a birthday. I take that as a time to remove myself from technology. I go back to the 19th century or so, and just so I can better appreciate our modern technology. I think we're born into a great time in human civilization. Technology has never gone at this fast pace, ever before, to my knowledge, and I'm enjoying every minute of it. It's a bit of a busy ride. If you blink, if you sleep too late, you'll miss something. But I find it exhilarating, personally.
Oh, boy, I have to tell you, first of all, I went to Tailman School at NYU. That's the kind of education I learned. No, I don't want to get involved in television. And I don't want to have a TV. I don't want to watch a TV. You know, maybe I create my own kind of TV that would be, how to say, different than what you would see. But anyway, yeah, you can take time away from technology intentionally, and this is going to be my experiment.
Okay, I wish you good luck. Like I said, my absence of technology is only, 24 times 3, so 3 days, give or take an extra hour for sundown and such. So that's what I do. Otherwise, I don't really feel the need to limit. I use, again, these things as a tool. I don't think they're a crutch. Sometimes they're a learning tool, which is very important. You know, occasionally getting something to do what I wanted to do takes almost as much time as just doing whatever it is. But I feel that at the end of the exercise, I've picked up a few ideas of what things are capable of doing. I have my computer to do all kinds of curious, interesting things that amuse me.
USL. You know, there are some spiritual people, they talk about going within, you know, make that connection, and instead of, like, reaching out, going to the external world, you know, to look into the internet for information and useful information, maybe creative information, you know, that you can find within yourself if you have enough, like you experience enough of this both within.
Okay, I think it was Plato who said that life without introspection is a wasted life. So I agree with you. It's good to look within. It's good to look without. Both sides of the same type of a boy. Sometimes people who live a little bit too much inside themselves, that's probably, too much of that is probably not great either. Others that have no internal introspection, well, those are unfortunate people. Who I hope learn introspection, but you know, you never know.
Would you say that technology is external and whatever the spiritual nature, the intuition and the creativity is within?
Well, yeah, I think technology, again, is a tool, and it's a tool for the external world. Until they put things in our brains as such, I'm not really looking forward to that advancement of neuro-electronic direct links that good old Musk was trying to pull with monkeys and pigs and things. But yeah, I think at this point artificial intelligence is not self-aware, is not conscious, and is not ultimately capable of creativity. It can simulate creativity. It can rearrange what it knows in various different ways and wait the results. But I don't think they're quite at the point of consciousness or self-awareness or creativity. I think that still is the bastion of the inner mind of humans.
Around 1985, a good friend of mine from school, he worked in a place where he built robots. He built robots. But the robots didn't have the intelligence of the AI technology today. And the robots that he made, he could get them to roll from one end of the room to the other. He could get them to lift an arm, move a leg, or blink their eyes with light. And I remember these things, you know, like 1985.
Generally speaking, when people talk about robotics, they're talking more about objects that look human-like, who can simulate the human, who can move in human ways, bipedal locomotion, and it's primarily an external situation. They usually don't talk about the artificial intelligence of a robot, and very often the control mechanisms for these mechanical robots are external. There's a linkage data cable, a power cable and such coming out of some part of their anatomy and going into a rather massive server rack that's doing the configuring. And even then, there's no suggestion that there's a kind of intellectual interaction or just repetition. It's kind of like, let's see if we can have the robot dance, let's see if we can have the robot jump and do acrobatics. But that's primarily where robotics kind of focus at this point. You know, I guess the term android is probably more word used for an object that's a robot shell and an artificial intelligence mind inside of it. I don't know of any androids that have been particularly designed and implemented. Again, this artificial intelligence, although it is fascinating and it is getting better every day, still has a far way to go to kind of simulate things that human beings take for granted. Yes, Ed.
In most cases, a robot refers to something on a production line. Now, like, imagine a car coming down an assembly line, and it reaches the robot because of the welding device in it. really what this is saying.
Yeah, I mean, word entomology is of interest to me. The word robot was coined by a Czechoslovakian writer. It was R.U.R. Russum's Universal Robot. And the concept of robots have kind of morphed and changed. Most of the time we hear, at least in companies, people discussing robots, they're talking about automated assembly lines. And car manufacturers are using a lot of those all over the place. Factory that has only one guy's job it is to fix all the broken robots who are doing all of the other work.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
And Ford is Union. So that eventually got turned around, thank goodness, and pushed out of unions. There were a lot of labor wars early on, but he aided them. Although, you know, right now it's a very strong union organization that works with Ford, but he had to go along with that. The union didn't do that voluntarily. I guess his robot ideas were, you know, just not the thing for the labor that he had there. That's the way it goes, you know. On top one day, especially just for you, you're listening to the population vacuum.
Yeah, well, these guys, although they think they run the world, eventually they lose control of it. Look, all bosses don't like unions, as far as I'm aware. You had that guy who was the CEO of Starbucks on a congressional interview who basically doesn't understand why anyone would want to talk to the union. So, I mean, that's just what billionaire company owners attitude is. Unions are just a pain in the back. They would like inexpensive, interchangeable labor. And nowadays, because the labor pool apparently has shrunk after COVID, and a lot of people decided not to go back to the low-wage jobs they had previously, there's a lot of legislation being written up to allow for more child labor. So let's bring in the 13-year-old coal.
Okay, very good. I worry about the future with all these other processes that are out there. That's going to all, you know. Hopefully that all gets turned around. I know he's anti-labor, too. Well, anti-union, anyway. We'll see as time goes on. I don't think he's going to make it to Mars, you know, without the cooperation whatever group will be assembling these satellites and rocket ships in the future.
I tell you, buying Twitter was the best thing that ever happened to me with them. You shut them up on everything else. Have you heard them mention the word Mars in the last 6 months?
No, I haven't. No, I haven't. Hopefully he's letting his engineers and workers do their thing without him interfering. He's got to find something else to play with. Keep him away and we'll get them on.
They want to put the data on Mars. What data do they want to put on Mars? It's not difficult to put data on Mars. I mean, you can just put it on one of the rockets that go there anyway if you have data on Mars. Here's a make-believe world where there's a community of people making profitable things that you can profit when you factor in the cost of getting them back to the Earth, which is a big markup.
Yeah, but I want to intentionally remove myself from technology as the internet-based communication all I'm talking about. Maybe at home, you know, on my computer, whatever, you know. At home, I'll engage in that. But when I'm out and about, you know, all kinds of things can happen when you're out in the street. And I don't want to be stressed by my phone.
Well, you know, there's no inherent rule that you have to be available by phone at all times. We both lived in an age where even before beepers were a familiar thing, when you were just unreachable, and if you needed to reach someone by phone, true, you could find a telephone booth, but, you know, about a third of the time, those things were broken and they didn't work. So it's possible to live a decent life without a cell phone and walk around and experience life? I had a discussion on 10 meters just earlier today about the concept of beepers. I was kind of traumatized by beepers at a relatively early age. My first beeper was handed to me when I was a medical student. I had arrived at King County Hospital, and the chief resident of the previous night was waiting for the chief resident of the morning. For about 15 minutes, I stared at that damn thing and sweat until the president of the morning came and reminded me of it. So I've never been a big fan of patients.
USL. And there was a time, you know, when there wasn't cell phones at all. There was one man who drove a Rolls-Royce Silver Spur. It was the year 1988, and he had a cell phone in his car. It was just talk, not even text, talk. And it was like a regular telephone cradle with that kind of, how to say, the wire that went around, you know. And, yeah, I remember he didn't use it when we were in the car. But, what to say, my friend had a 2-meter walkie-talkie with his keypad to make phone calls for 25 cents to the local receiver. That's the whole reason why repeaters became so popular, because of auto patch technology that you could patch into the repeater and make outgoing phone calls. Repeaters developed all over the place, and people loved to show off how they could make cheap phone calls on their handy talkies. The earliest car-based cell phones, in my memory, they look like these massive military walkie-talkies, because they were basically wireless analog handy-talkies that were wired into a phone directory someplace for an outlandish amount of money, most likely. It's an interesting thing that developed over time.
So the question is, you know, if you look at analog technology, look at digital technology, and see the differences and the value of each, and, you know, what it can do for you, you know, say analog and digital, maybe there's some way to combine them.
Well, the dentist has been to shift from analog to digital because digital is a little bit more flexible as integrated circuits became cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. Less things, get more bandwidth, and all kinds of nice little pieces. The original cellular phone that the individual carrier was analog, and there is still a scar from that back. If you look at radio specs, there are sources of the radio spectrum that are not out of generic and old-fashioned radios, because that was the original where the analog transmission took place, and they were fighting. So even though no one that I know of has an analog cell phone, those frequencies are usually to receivers. So things have repercussions down the corridor of time. Finally, yes.
Digital and software, and if it changed precious fact that people don't appreciate just how important that is in the whole thing.
Well, you're sort of describing software defined radios. I've been a big proponent for it for many, many years, and one of the aspects is that you can, by firmware alone, upgrade a software defined radio beyond belief. Limitations are your programming skill and your imagination. But yeah, I agree with you. To a degree, there's more wiggle room in the digital domain than there will ever be in the analog. A lot of times when different Wi-Fi protocols are designed before they're formalized and finished, some companies will produce versions of early versions of it with the idea that hopefully by firmware changing, they can get it under the latest, greatest spec. And so a lot of times they get away with it. Occasionally a hiccup doesn't quite work. But yeah, you have a much more optimistic chance of upgrading a little bit with digital than you'll ever do with analog legacy kinds of services.
Yeah, but the point is, back in the days before this stuff, the most trivial functional change could take 6 months when you go through the entire manufacturing process. You're laying out boards, ordering new parts.
Hey, yes, I agree with you entirely, Ed, and I use as an example. I bought my Flex 5700 about 8 years ago. Now, up until kind of like the month that I bought it, it was not capable of operating frequency modulation. It was just modulation and simple modulation. That was it. And it was only that suddenly it was capable of frequency modulation and it was capable of injecting DL codes. What it would take to radio that was built to the AM and the frequency modulation.
Data culture, comparing analog and digital for quality, you know, is it, how to say, you know, because some technology is obsolete, that it is better or worse than something that is new. And maybe a combination of the two might be the best thing.
I would agree. Just because something is new does not mean it is better. Some new things are better. Some new things are worse. Some new things are just the best thing to think of. John, WA2EDH, you want to say that?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that the software-defined item has been extended to the cable TV industry, and that now most of the cable boxes are essentially software-defined, so they can jump from Form 56 to Form 54 or any of the video codes. Just by changing software, where back in the old days they had the basic suppressed mode for the cable box. If they wanted to change that, you had to change to a different cable box. So that's extended even into the cable TV industry. Other thing I wanted to mention is that back in the old days, I bought a Yaesu FRG9600, which came out before the cell phones, those frequencies in the 800 megahertz range were banned. So this is one of those early 960 to 905 megahertz continuously, AM, narrowband FM, wideband FM, single sideband. So back in the old days, I used to monitor some of the early analog cell phones,
other languages. They would just pop up, and it was really strong also.
they read a series of computers and then just vanish. So yeah, I remember hearing quite a few.
I was never a big fan of country's shortwave radio stations, Radio Cuba, Radio America, Radio This, Radio That. It was a little bit too overproduced for my taste. I like fluffy stuff.
AG2R1.
Yes, David.
I have a question. I listen to ham radio. I talk on ham radio, so I engage in it. I listen to AM broadcast, FM broadcast. I listen to what else? I guess, you know, lots of things that you can engage in. My question is, experiment with rocket tech phone. Rocket tech phone doesn't have internet. There's no data. Is there data from audio signal? And can that data be compiled by marketers? Correct?
It depends upon the manufacturer and the company involved. You can stuff a lot of things into a lot of other things for not that much thought. So, is it possible for something that I guess you would call a not smart telephone to be able to record your voice and do all the nasty geolocation, to do all the nasty things that a state-of-the-art smartphone can do? If you're a sneaky guy, yeah, you could do that. Other than breaking it open and figuring out what the chipsets were for, you wouldn't particularly know what was going on.
Well, this phone is not an Android phone. It's not an iOS phone. It's, how to say, it's independent of those operating systems. So, maybe I have a chance.
I mean, most likely no one's going to spend a lot of time and effort in tapping you. So, most likely, if it's just not a smartphone, it's not going to do all the recordings and all the things that our smartphones do. But you know, if the question is it theoretically possible, it certainly can. It does not necessarily have to demonstrate Android or iOS front end to you. It can operate by itself and take commands over the air from the cellular network. So it's possible, but it's unlikely.
Well, QSO, thank you, Roy. I have to say that at least, you know, it is unlikely that that's good enough.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, again, I was talking to someone, I think this morning on 10 Meters, who was suggesting that he doesn't like the idea of bow bums. He thinks that they have tracking devices in them, possibly, and recording devices and all kinds of things. I don't necessarily think any of that. I think it's just a way to kind of destroy other manufacturers of communications devices by flooding the market with cheap stuff that just kind of kills off the profit motive of other companies. But, just because a person is paranoid doesn't necessarily mean that someone isn't following them. You never know. My attitude is, and I've mentioned this before, anything that I write in an email, I think in terms of, is this okay if I post it on an index card in my local library bulletin board? So I'm not going to write anything that is dubious, because you never know where these emails kind of sail around. There are some people who invest in companies that encrypt their email and lock it down so that the only one who could possibly read it is the guy on the other end. I don't know. If some country finds it necessary to listen in on my Michigan, then their penalty is to hear all of my Michigan.
None of it is going to help the war effort, as far as I'm aware.
I can hear you.
A lot of people can. It's called radio.
Good evening. Sorry, it sounds great. I'm having fun listening. I think you could be on this part.
Okay, very good, Jeff. You know, I've had these weird type of conversations about phones versus radio. Every so often, I'll come across two guys who are in some deep conversation of the two of them, and only the two of them. And if a third person shows up, they kind of do a freeze the crowd type of a thing. And I always kind of say to myself, gee, there's this new thing called the telephone. You dial the guy up and you talk to him and no one interrupts you.
Sure, yeah, but I always keep the bug out of my coffee in the morning. You know, I want to have a nice, excellent, wonderful day, you know, without stressing out that I have to look something up or I have to call someone for whatever, and without this idea that if I tell somebody something, some marketer will pick it up and use it for a national advertisement.
What can I tell you? The concept of, and we've talked about this before, the concept of privacy is dead. We do not have privacy. The big brother, little brother, all kinds of people are watching what you do, where you do it, when you did it, how you did it, why you did it. So lots of luck with that. You know, unless you want to be kind of like the next generation of the Unabomber and live someplace up in the mountains and live off the land and be off the wire, there's going to be a bunch of people who know about you. There are data brokers that buy and sell all the little details of what credit cards you use, what purchases you've made, what web pages you've gone to. I'm sure everyone out there has experienced the joy of checking out some item on Amazon and for the next week being promoted that item as ads all over the damn internet. So those are usually cookie-based situations, but there are all kinds of hidden pixel methods. It's an industry in an industry in an industry. But the bottom line, again, is live your life as though people are taking notes and posting it in the library bulletin board.
QSL. But, you know, I want to remove the stress and the anxiety from the data culture, you know? I don't want to be connected to it all the time. And, no, I'm not going to live up in the mountains, you know? I live in the urban center. This is my experiment.
Okay. I don't want to kind of breed paranoia, but it's not only cell phones, although it always amuses me that I even have an article on my link page that some lunatic in Missouri State Senate, is trying to pass a law to make it illegal to inject chips in vaccines into people so that they can trace them. Not being aware that everyone carries around a smartphone, for the most part, that tracks them. But even if you weren't using a smartphone that tracks you, there is face recognition and there are closed-circuit television, closed-circuit cameras all over the place. It's not as bad in New York as it is in places like the United Kingdom, I think, has the highest concentration of closed-circuit cameras. They lack the artificial intelligence to go through the vault, so most of them aren't being seen by anything or anyone. So I don't know what they're doing with all the data, probably nothing. Anyway, there's so many different ways to spy on you that even if you leave your cell phone at home, Big Brother, if he wants to know where you are, I'm sure he can figure it out.
Right, and whether he's looking or not, you know, I still want to relieve myself of the stress of it as best as I can. So thank you very much for
reinforcing this subject.
Welcome, David. I always appreciate your participation in the technical net. Thanks. I'm sure you'll come up with something else next week. Once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limewire Technical Net. We still have a little bit of time, so if there's anyone who has something to bring up, a comment, a question, a topic, please feel free. Hit that push-to-talk button.
UGW?
Yes.
Hello, Roy. My first name is Wen. Whiskey Echo November. I have two questions I'd like to ask.
Sure. Can I have your prefix again? I got the suffix of UDW.
Yes. November 2.
Very good, Wes.
My questions are, I have two Zenith transoceanic radios, a 1000D and a 7000Y. And so both of them are operating. Their potentiometers are crashing. Light switches on the 7000Y is crashing. The band selection switch is dirty on both of them, etc. And I was wondering if there's anybody on Long Island or in New York City that I could trust these radios to try and bring them back to factory spec. Over to you.
Oh, well, okay, good one. Of course, who springs to mind always about fixing radios is our own Andy, WA2CDL. He fixes all kinds of different radios. Sort of sounds like it just needs to be kind of cleaned out. Spray, I'm blocking on the type of spray. I have it about 2 feet away from me in a drawer someplace that I use for oxidation of potentiometers and such. I give it a little squirt. I turn the knob back and forth a few times, and it usually cleans the wipers. So you might even want to consider fixing bits and pieces of it yourself if you're so inclined. But if you're not so inclined and you would like a name, you can check out WA2CDL. Like I said, he fixes lots of radios.
Okay, thank you very much, and that is WA2, Charlie Delta Lima, over.
Yes, indeed. That's Andy. He's a regular here. He sometimes takes a seat and does a little bit on the technical net called Andy's Corner.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm relocating my shack, so I'm on a temporary journey. I don't know how I'm doing, but... I just got a 7300, and I'd like two diodes, microscopically small they are, removed from the radio. I was wondering if you could do that in the open.
Yeah, I'm pretty much sure that he could. He does all kinds of esoteric. He rebuilds the wafer switches. He does surface mount devices. So yeah, he could. I'm guessing that you want it enabled for Mars.
Yes, I'd like to have the radio. I don't know how long I've had this ICOM 718. I'm going to be 71, and I think I've been a licensed ham for over 40 years. I can't remember when I got my tech ticket, but it's open, and I'd like to do the same with the 7300.
Okay, yeah, if he has the time, because he's a very busy guy, but if he has the time, he could probably do it blindfolded, but he won't do it blindfolded. It shouldn't be that much of a problem. I understand that these things are surface mounts and they're a bit of a pain in the backside. You basically need a magnifying glass to see these things.
Yes, they're very small. And, I was And I enjoy Jeanette immensely. Thank you very much.
Hi, you're welcome, Wen. I hope you return in future months and participate some more. I think the reason is simply the economics of manufacture of electronics these days. You know, gone are the good old days where people actually would solder things. These are all, you know, we talked about robots. They're effectively robots that mount all the parts on the PC boards, and they go through a wave soldering device to solder everything into place. So it's just easier for them to have all surface mount devices and not build in loops of wire that users can just snip off and be more convenient for them. So it's the fact that manufacturers tend to think more of their own convenience versus customers' inconvenience.
The art and science of shortwave radio is changing so quickly. Looking back when I first started, but I'm enjoying it, and I will be back on the net. I thank you very much for the invitation, and hopefully I'll get to talk to Andy about this radio. You know, they're just such magnificent things. I just have to maintain them. I feel responsible for them all.
Yes, I know more than a few transatlantic radio owners, and some of them have fixed their radios many, many years ago and complain about the fiddly aspects of the fix. Getting those the tuning indicator quite right can kind of drive some people deeply upset. But you know, again, a lot of what your transatlantic, it sounds like it just needs kind of a clean brush up and a antioxidant spray. So I wish you good luck with that, and I hope you and Andy are able to kind of get together and he can fix the stuff for you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the information, and I enjoyed the net very much tonight, and I'll be back. Thank you very much, and into UGW, clear and listening.
Okay, very good, Wes. Once again, I am AC2GS. I'm still AC2GS. Roy here with the Limar Technical Net, so we have a little bit more time. If anyone has any other topics or questions or comments to make tonight, please feel free. Hit that push to talk.
November 2, Mike Alpatron.
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to chime in for a minute. Something that a lot of people may or may not know, something that I found out, that the Ukrainian soldiers are using the Volkswagen radios, the DMR mode, with encryption, and they got thousands of them. And they use them for close-in communication.
Oh, that's interesting to know. I had no idea. You know, I try and keep up to date with Ukraine. I've been buying little things like software. There's companies that make graphic software from Ukraine. I've been buying some stamps from some Ukrainians, and they really perk up when I end up my order by ending it with Slava Ukraine, which means glory to Ukraine. And a nice bunch of people. It's interesting to know. I am not anti Valphone. I think Valphone is a great bargain, although I tend to think of it more as a disposable radio. If I drop it in the water, it costs me a big $30. There are radios where the case for the radio costs multiples of the cost for a whole kit for Valphone. So I'm glad that it's being utilized in the Ukraine war, I wish them well out there.
Yeah, very good. I have one or two of them hanging around, but I don't use them most of the time. I'm using my Icon with the outside antenna the majority of the time. There's a few handhelds that I do use, which is also very cheap, which is the PYT MD380, for example. And then I got a portable D-Star as well.
Yeah, I joke often that bowel phones come in every box of Cracker Jack. I have a bowel bug. It was probably the second radio that I bought. The first radio I bought, I decided I wanted a real adult one, so I bought the ICOM, I think it's the 92AD. But over the years, I've gotten a TYT380. Also, I'm very happy with my Anytone 878. It seems like every other guy operating on a hotspot is using an Anytone 878 to get into a hotspot. Very, very popular, and it's a well-built, sturdy, not as cheap as Alphong, and certainly, you know, has much more capability. But you pick up an Anytone, and it's a much heavier device. If you pick up a Balfunk, it's almost going to float away. I get this idea that it's, you know, maybe about five or six chips kind of soldered to each other in the middle of the case, and everything else is just empty space.
Yeah, you're making me laugh, but you're cracking me up. All right, that's all I had to say. And nice to chime in anyway. And I've been a ham for many years, of 72. I'm mostly active on HF.
Okay, very good. It's Ken, right?
That's correct.
Okay, very good, Ken. Thanks for participating, and don't be a stranger. You know where we are every Sunday night at 8 p.m., and it's only been going for 43 years or so far. So who knows how long this is going to go.
Yeah, roger that. I used to work with Dick in the AIO years ago, so I know him. I met him from time to time. I worked in the calibration lab before I retired. Okay, bye-bye. 73, November 2, Mike Alba Charlie.
Okay, 73, Ken. Once again, I am still AC2GS. I'm still Ned Jacob for the Weimar Technical Net. We still have a little bit more time. So if anyone has any questions, comments, topics, or discussion, feel free. Hit that switch to talk.
WB2BS, sir.
Yes, right.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up. You said you're actually buying some stuff, software and other things from Ukraine. What is it you're finding that they could actually buy and receive? Also, I've heard this before, that amateurs and presumably others are donating radios to Ukraine. As far as anybody here knows, are we allowed to donate this technology? Maybe that's a question we can't answer. Because none of us are lawyers and don't play them on Echolink. Go ahead.
I do not think Ukraine is on any restrictive list for most consumer products that are available for people to send them.